Christmas is almost here, and we're going over the final 2 points of consideration on Mother Teresa in Jean Allaire's book, The Four Teresas. And reading for us today, beginning on page 104, is Father Lou.
Voluntary poverty, which was the source of liberation for Mother Teresa. She believed detachment from worldly comforts brought deeper attachment to Christ. Not only did she own next to nothing, but she lived without even simple comforts like carpet and electric fans. This freed her to experience firsthand that all we need is Christ. Consider, what material comforts would be most difficult to give up if God called me to do so?
Well, mine's the car. Honestly, I just had all my adult and college age kids come home, and we're all fighting for the one vehicle, which means we're going to have to work together to get places. So that would be really, it's been really hard, but it's, we're trying to figure it out. So I would say my car.
I think my home, that it would be hard for me. You know, I watched my daughter actually go through voluntary poverty, and they did this for 4 years. So when I watched her do it, I thought, okay, maybe I could do it. I mean, they ended up selling their home, selling everything they had, and living in an RV with six children for 4 years. And so, of course, they could only use what was in there. They didn't put anything in storage. They, you know, they didn't have the money to do that. Her husband had been in the military and got out, couldn't find a job for 2 years, and then went to school to change direction the next 2 years. And when I watched her do that, and the things that she did to budget and to make sure they had enough, and I mean, they lived off their savings, and watching somebody so close to me go through that, it was inspirational for me. And then I had to move and go to I knew I wanted to go smaller to what I had. So I got rid of some cherished items. But, you know, when you finally do it, it's finally like, these are once again, just things. And I think that helps. You know, I love to play the piano, and I had a baby grand, and I think it was the hardest thing that I did was to get rid of that. And, you know, but at the same time, I knew I'd always have music. And so I can still take my guitar with me, and I could, if I wanted to, get a smaller version of a piano. You know, they have such fancy things. So, you know, I think God just, I think he delights in us when we do these things to detach ourselves, to get ourselves ready for going to heaven. And they're all little pieces, little steps that we take.
In our particular parish, we are in January, we will be gearing up for something called Exodus 90, which is for men.
I was Father just Luke. Thinking that.
Yeah. And you can speak on it just in the sense that my husband participated last year, and it was all about detaching from comforts and things that, you know, are just part of our life. But the interesting thing is to watch how each of these men had very different struggles with very different things. Most men, a lot of them said, you know, the cold shower, which is one of the aesthetical practices that was on this list of things that they had to do. For my husband, he could care less. He didn't mind cold showers. It was just interesting to watch the difference. Father, obviously, you being a man, I don't know if, I mean, maybe the Exodus 90 isn't the thing for everybody, but it does speak to that, that of which we are talking about, is just giving up some of these comforts.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about it because, yeah, it's coming around the corner. I'm being heavily recruited for this round. I had done it before in college seminary. But Father Curtis did it last time, so I think I'm joining in this year. We'll see what happens. But yeah, I think just that journey, and I think particularly because it is voluntary poverty, it's like, okay, I'm choosing to give these things to God. I think that's what transforms, right? And everybody has their own kind of unique thing, you know, whether it's, for me, it would probably be technology, you know, it'd be the ability to, like, you know, scroll through news on my phone or watch the soccer game or play video games with my friends online. You know, it's like, okay, the Lord's probably calling me to ditch some of that stuff anyway. And so that freedom that comes in as a result of that, I think the absolute hardest thing for me to give up would probably be almost less material, but just that material comfort in our life, here of having just free time to myself, and I think that was something that I recognized when I was over in India is, yeah, there's tons of people all over the planet that just don't get that. It's like the day is to survive and to take care of yourself and your family. I don't need to create a fake example. My parents, like growing up, like my mom worked all day. My dad took us to school, picked us up, prepared dinner, and then he went to work all night. And then like, they're swapping kind of like to provide for our family. And it was either like they're at work, like earning a living, or they're home taking care of me and my two sisters, and they hopefully occasionally got to sleep, like that was their journey, and so the Lord like called them to give up that sort of quote unquote free time for that period of their life. I like to think that we're paying it back for them these days, but I don't know. that impact that each one of us has, there's going to be seasons of letting go of certain things that we can dive in a new way.
It's one of the neat things about our Catholic faith is we have these built-in days and seasons of fasting built right into our liturgical year. Everybody's familiar with Lent and fasting during Lent, but a lot of people don't realize that we are technically supposed to be fasting during Advent as well as we approach the Christmas season. And anyone who practices the traditional calendar, there are several Ember days that are built in throughout the year where you have additional fasting throughout the year.
Mother Teresa received so much attention that she could have given in to the temptation to consider herself a miracle worker, but she always redirected the attention toward God. She believed she was only an instrument in his hand. Her humility helped make her blessed. Consider, how can I respond to compliments for the sake of God's glory instead of my own? And I will happily get y'all's advice on this because this is something I struggle mightily with as a priest, how to kind of accept some graces and give it to the Lord rather than just either diving in for ourselves or to reject it completely.
And one of the things I've learned to do is just say thank you. And then, I sing, and so I'll have people come up and compliment me on that. And I just say, God gave me this gift and I'm sharing it. And for me, and like for you, Father, it's very public. And so it's not one of those hidden private ones that people don't always see. And so I just say, we all have our gifts and I want to share what I have because it's God giving it to me and it's pure gift. So, and I just thank them as opposed to, I think I learned to do it a long time ago and I'm grateful that I can just, say, but that I also want to use it because I could, like in false humility, not say, I don't want to sing. And I don't want to do that either. I want to share that a gift that God's given me. And like I said, everybody has gifts and they share them. And so, like I said, some of them are just more public.
Right. Just that, like you're saying, that all gifts come from Him and that, everything we have and are comes from Him. And that we can't do anything without Him, and just that understanding of where we are in relation to Him, and it's all gift. I think can help just seeing ourselves in His light and in the truth, and how much He loves us and loves each one of us, in their unique and unrepeatability.
I in years past, my husband went to Jesuit high school and my son did as well. And I learned the motto, Ad Majorem Dei Gloriam. And I loved that AMDG. And, I really thought, oh, that's a really great thing. Like when somebody compliments you, AMDG, just kind of get past it, whatever. And I, first of all, I just kind of started to think about it. What does that mean to give God all the glory? Like, what does that really mean? And if I'm going to really do that, I really want to like understand it in my heart. And A friend of mine one day walking out of mass showed me a quote from St. Irenaeus. Father, you probably know which century. I know it was a long time ago, early centuries. But his quote was that to give God the greatest glory is a man fully alive. And I thought, that's it. So when we think about it, that God like created and formed each of us unrepeatably different, right? That like if you were a artist or a creator of anything, the greatest thing is for that thing to become all that it was fully created to be. So by giving God the greatest glory, I can become and do the things he created me to do. With that being said, I use a lot of metaphors in my house. My children can't stand it, but it's the only way my brain can work and explain and teach to them. And I use a balloon because, you know, there's always balloons for birthdays and all kinds of things. And Father, to answer your question, I always look at releasing a balloon. So like for two things, when you do something well, you know, release it quickly. Like it wasn't yours. It came through God. Anything good that I do came from God. The only thing I bring to the equation is my sin and my yes. And I have to keep telling myself that it is God that does all good through me. I bring my sin and my yes. And the other thing to release very quickly is any kind of resentment or anger or what unforgiveness about anybody. So if I release those two things quickly, I don't know. It's just helping me get on the path of holiness, which, you know, I love that Gina brought that up in the very beginning, that she had never contemplated holiness. And that's what the four Teresas, you know, we're going to be reading in the next chapter, the final chapter, that's what they really brought. It was this universal call to holiness that has been so really enlightening in the last 60 years from the Second Vatican Council. And I really think the Lord wants it now more than ever for laities to help our parish priests, our pastors, because it is a missionary territory in parish life.
Yeah, you know, I think questions like these are all, I think the first instinct is like, okay, how do I resist, you know, pride and things like that? But I'd be willing to bet that most people, maybe even not on the planet, but I think particularly most people who are probably going to be going on this journey through the four Teresas, the problem is less about kind of puffing ourselves up and more about willing to step up into the spotlight in some ways. You know, and we certainly see that in our Teresas. You know, like Thérèse Lisieux did not want to write the autobiography. Like the sister, her religious sisters had to like forcefully encourage her to do this, and she did it out of obedience. You know, Mother Teresa never wanted. I think Jean even writes about how much she talks about the purgatory of journalists and photographers and things like that. And that was a suffering for her, but it's like, if she hadn't done any of that and that hadn't spread like wildfire throughout the whole world, like how much had that changed based on how she allowed herself to be shared as a gift? And yeah, I think for me kind of growing into this, because I think my first reaction would be, you know, typically probably the most common would be, like after like a homily that touches somebody, you know, like the compliment and you can deflect very quickly, like, oh yeah, like it's not me, it's God. And people are good with that, but sometimes we're like, okay, yeah, like relax, you know? But I think for me, even just sitting with acknowledging the gifts that God gives us, right? It's like with preaching in particular, it's so evident to me. Like I remember myself stuttering my way through middle school speech class, you know, even in business school, like business writing and presenting, getting so nervous and still having that natural aspect of who I am, you know, the anxiety and the adrenaline that kicks in every single time before I go out and preach. And so it's like, okay, yeah, like the fact that this ever goes well is so obviously like a gift of the Lord stepping in. I think for each one of us, we have these things that God has given us, and some will appear more natural, some will appear supernatural where it's like, oh yeah, like God came in and took over. And sometimes it's just gonna be like, oh yeah, like God gave me this personality, this spirit, these talents. I think the more that we can just see that and own that and like recognize that God gave us this gift, and to reject a gift is more insulting than to use it. You know, he desires us to shine this. The couple, I just celebrated a wedding of a young couple here. And that was the gospel they chose for their wedding reading was, you know, a light shine on a hill is not meant to be hidden. You know, don't put it under a bushel basket, like put it on a lampstand. You are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world. So the fact they could see that, like, yeah, this marriage I'm entering into is a gift given to me by God for the transformation of the planet. You know, starting with the people closest to me, my vocation as a priesthood, like our jobs, our relationships, our particular skills. It's like, yeah, like the Lord is so excited to see where this goes. And so I think the more that we can see his desire in that, the more we can enter into that. And then as the compliments, you know, ring in, and probably also as like criticism rolls in too, you know, both of those we can kind of take and kind of give to him instead of allowing it to seep, kind of rooting itself in our hearts in some ways, kind of like that balloon. It's allowing it to float up to the Lord there. So yeah, I think it's an ongoing daily journey of recognizing the great gift that we've been given. And we've talked about in these other questions, the gift of the Eucharist, the gift of those moments where he maybe gives us a little bit of poverty to enter into freedom, you know, the gift that he gives us in relationship with others and in prayer. Yeah, it's all for his greater glory. And through that, the glory of his people.
I love things about our Catholic faith, Father. I just love that, what you just said. And in the sense that we ponder these words like, you know, glory, giving God glory and whatever, gratitude is another one of those words. And I really sat with that. Like when you get a gift, obviously some people write thank you notes and you want to show your gratitude. And we teach our children that at a very early age. But one of the things I started thinking about with being grateful for a gift, the best way, you know, certainly a note is great, but is to use the gift as the giver intended. So for example, if I gave you a book that I really thought you would like to read, if it sits on a shelf, which it may for 7 years, and it comes around when the Lord's ready for that person to read it. But if the person like re-gifts it, or it's just, it gets thrown in a box, you know, obviously I'm not, as that person receiving that gift, using it the way the giver intended. Take anything. I mean, we re-gift things, we do all kinds of stuff, but how profound it is to look at every gift, whether it is a supernatural one, like you said, like a characteristic or a trait that, gosh, I wasn't like that when I was younger. And now all of a sudden, you know, you're having to preach in front of all these people. Or have I been given some profound gifts, you know, that are natural gifts? My husband, personally, he happens to be a really good golfer. And it's really hard sometimes. We have lots of discussions about God and golf, because, you know, he's got this constant temptation. He has to be humble, right? Or the head will not go through the door. But the thing is I go, why do you think God gave you this gift of golf? Do you really think it's to, you know, have like a 61? I mean, granted, that really attracts other people to the discussion. It's because it's for God. And now you have to figure out why God has given you this gift. And ultimately, it over the course of a lot of his tournaments and things, where it might be his golf bag that he has AMDG on it. It may be the miraculous medal that he wears around his neck. It may just be calling himself on his own shots and just being a man of integrity, courtesy, sportsmanship, kindness. That draws, and it's infectious. And hence, you know, why a lot of people want to play with my husband is because he has exuded that to me as someone that is married to him. And you know, what are your gifts that, if you're listening to this right now, they may have been given to you for a reason that you're not really looking at, which is drawing people to the Lord through your gift.
Yeah, golf is definitely not a gift that I've ever received, but certain priests have, and I can see, I mean, in some ways I'm almost envious where the like ministry that can happen, you're trapped like with three other people for hours, you know? And so it's like the fact that they can go out with particular parishioners or businessmen or whatever, and be able to just share their faith. It's like such a gift on this thing. You can also share some negative things depending on how the golf game is affecting you. But I think if you enter in with the right spirit, like Mike could certainly share a gift there. But I love what you said, and this will be my final thought, is, you know, just what is the intention of the giver, right? And I think one of the reasons we can struggle to accept compliments or praise or whatever, or even gifts, you know, from the Lord, from other people, is that voice that comes in. It's like, well, I don't deserve all this. I don't deserve all this praise. I don't deserve this compliment. I don't deserve all these gifts. And it's like, yeah, like you don't. And God doesn't really care. Like in the same way, when somebody gives you a gift, it's rarely like, oh yeah, I'm giving you this gift because you did something for me. And I'd feel like the need to kind of satisfy some sort of like recompensory sort of thing. Like, you know, the nature of a gift is like, yeah, I love you, and I'm going to give you this thing because I care about you. Or like, I was going and this thing like reminded me of you, and I wanted to share that moment. And it's like, yeah, they're not giving it to you because you deserve it. They give it to you because they care about you and love you, you know, even if something so simple as praise or compliment. I think that in many ways, the intentionality, certainly from the Lord, like, yep, he has a purpose of us using our gifts for other people, but it's also like, he wants us to realize how much he loves us, like, and how much individual joy and life, like, we bring him. And so it's like, yeah, let's use those gifts, reminding ourselves of this God who individually delights in every single one of us and like loves to see those kind of flourish. Yeah, what an opportunity. And so then it's like the journey of holiness doesn't have to be this sort of tired drudgery, right? Like the journey of holiness is diving into and receiving fully these awesome gifts that God has given us, and the way he like longs to see that explode in joy and grace and peace and service and love throughout the world.
And that wraps up our fourth chapter on St. Teresa of Calcutta. Coming up after Christmas, we're going to continue reading from The Four Teresas by Gina Laird. We're going to read the final chapter beginning on Monday. Have a blessed Christmas.